Just waiting for the last people to come in. Venables, Padachara, sometimes there's not very good sound in those seats, so it's great to sit meditation there, but if you want to listen to Dharma talk, you may have to sort of sit down the bottom over there. Try it out first of all. Now you may be okay because you're both young. Usually the old nuns have trouble hearing. So you can sit up there first of all. If you can't hear, then get down. Sit up here first of all, and then if it doesn't work, if you can't hear, then go down. Maybe just another 2 or 3 minutes in case there's any final people outside. I think that's most people. And someone comes in late, doesn't matter, they can come in. So first of all, welcome everybody to this 9-day relaxation camp. In other words, this is, you're going to learn how to relax your body and relax your mind. So when you come to a meditation retreat here in China Grove with Ajahn Brahm, you have absolutely nothing to worry about. No fear, nothing to be scared of. Those of you who've been here before just know how relaxed and easy and beneficial for the body and the mind it is. I'm not quite sure of the housekeeping, which Bianca says, but usually as far as the schedule and what's expected of you, I usually deal with that part of the housekeeping. And you see, the only schedule which is really important is 6:45 breakfast and 11 o'clock lunch. Those are the only two you really have to remember. In other words, there are some retreats which you're asked to get up at a certain time in the morning. And there are bells and alarms and sirens go off in the early morning. And you have to be here till late at night. And everything is done by bells, which is just like being in national service in Singapore, or like being back in school. And I don't like treating people like children, except with my jokes. And apart from that, you know, respect people. You're here because you want to learn some meditation, to relax the body, to learn about the mind. And so there's no need for me to impose any control on you. So number one, for the first few days, just relax. So you don't have to be up in time for the morning chanting or the first sitting or anything at all. I say this because some of you have come from overseas. Some of you are tired. Some of you need to sort of catch up on some sleep or whatever. the first 3 days, relax the body. So tomorrow morning, please don't set your alarm clocks, except maybe for 6:45 for breakfast. If you want to come up here to meditate, fine. I usually up here because I just can't stop getting up early. I've been training myself for so many years, it's just habit. So I'll probably be up here, do a little bit of chanting in the morning, and then afterwards do some meditation. So just come for the breakfast. 8 o'clock will become the first talk, where I give the first instructions on meditation. And throughout the whole day of this retreat, the following days, you'll hear the schedule is very light, where you work with the nature of your body and mind, rather than work with some artificial structure called a schedule. So there will be a talk at 8 o'clock every day, and after that there will be, not the first day, which is tomorrow, but afterwards there will be interviews, so you can come and you put your name down and you can ask some questions about your meditation, and I'll be there to give you like a one-on-one interview time. If you don't want to, you don't have to, because most of the instructions that you will hear during the talks anyway. If you have some special questions, you can come during the interview times. And again, in the afternoon, if you don't want to do that, you can meditate here, do sitting meditation, walking meditation, or just go through a walk in the forest just to see what's out there. There's a lot of opportunity and time just to relax. And when there's no schedule, in the afternoon it's the same. You can have a rest after lunch if you wish, or you can do some exercises, or you can meditate. What you're trying to do is live in this present moment. Don't have all these goals of what you want to achieve and what you want to reach. People who have goals just get more stressed out. It's just more of the same. Instead of being a human going somewhere, be a human being here. So too many of us are human goings and human doings. We forgot what it's like to be a human being. So learn how to be here in this moment. And there you'll find all the peace and stillness and deep meditation you'd ever want. There are so many people. I travel around the world. And whether it was in Indonesia, whether it's in Korea, where my fellow monk comes from, or whether it's in Singapore or Malaysia, there's too many people come up to me and say, yeah, I like to meditate, I want to meditate, but it's just so unpleasant. I have physical pain, and my mind can't stop, and I get so frustrated. But I suppose I'm a Buddhist, I have to do it. And for many people, meditating is like going to the dentist, which is why for many the prospect of coming on a 9-day meditation retreat is the same as spending 9 days in the dentist surgery. And they're so afraid. And fortunately, that if you haven't been to one of my meditation retreats before, you find this is totally the opposite of those sorts of retreats. It is soft, it is gentle, but it's there for a purpose because it works. This type of meditation practice is very popular now in the world. That's why it's hard to get on one of these retreats. And the reason it's popular, because I don't know why the other monks and teachers don't do this, this one actually works and makes you come into very peaceful, relaxed, blissful states of mind. Exactly what is supposed to happen. For those of you who think that meditation should be fierce, please remember first basic teaching, the 2 types of meditation. For those of you who have studied some Buddhism before who don't know my teachings, people always think that means vipassana and samatha. It does not mean vipassana and samatha. Those two are the same, which I'll describe later on. The 2 types of meditation are called Second Noble Truth Meditation and Third Noble Truth Meditation. For those of you who don't know those 4 Noble Truths, those are basic Buddhist teachings. The 2nd Noble Truth is that craving leads to suffering. The 3rd Noble Truth is letting go of craving leads to the bliss of Nibbana. So, 2nd Noble Truth Meditation is you want something. And the Buddha said, craving leads to suffering. If you want something, you are going to suffer on this retreat. You're going to get frustrated. You are going to get headaches. You're going to get stressed out. That is not Buddhist meditation. That's Second Noble Truth meditation. So, you turn it backwards. If you are suffering in your meditation or any time on this retreat, it means you're wanting something. So that's ridiculous. Your meditation is not working, you're frustrated, you're tired, you're anxious, you're restless, and you're not enjoying it. It's because you want something. That is the cause of unpleasant meditation. The third noble truth is letting go of craving, of wanting, is the end of suffering. It leads to the bliss of Nibbana. That's called Third Noble Truth meditation. So let go of all wanting, of all craving, of all goals, of all what you want to achieve. And if you let go of all of that, you will find, surprise, surprise, the Buddha was actually accurate and correct. It leads to peace. It leads to stillness. It leads to these incredible insights and the bliss of Nibbana. Letting go of wanting. That is why what we're aiming for here, if you have any aim at all, is to be in this moment and to be still. Again, this is basic housekeeping of meditation. Please don't ever think that meditation means concentration. I know that you've heard me say this so many times. Concentration was an inaccurate and unfortunate translation of the word samadhi, the Pali word for meditation. It does not mean concentration. And when people understood it means concentration, it turned all meditation retreats into concentration camps, and people got very unpleasant results, as you would in a concentration camp. And also they tried so hard to concentrate, and of course they failed every time. This is nothing to do with concentration. This is everything to do with stillness. So we're trying to achieve the stillness of the mind. And the only way to achieve stillness of the mind is to let things go. Let them be. Stop interfering. Ajahn Chah's famous simile, he would hold up his hand and wave it up and down. And he would say, I've done this so many times, I was doing this, where was it, in Canberra a couple of nights ago. You wave it up and down, it's not saying bye-bye to anybody. This is a simile of a leaf on a tree. And the leaf on a tree only moves up and down because of the wind. If there was no wind, if the forest was perfectly free of wind, those leaves would be perfectly still. They wouldn't move at all. So if you go out in the forest here, you see the leaves on the trees and the bushes are perfectly still, except when there's a wind. Because the natural state of a leaf on a tree is to not move. It only moves because of something external called the wind. And this is precisely what my teacher taught me. Your mind is like that leaf. It only moves because something is disturbing it. Its natural state, or we might call its default state, is to be perfectly still. It only moves because something is making it move, like the wind moves the leaf. And what makes your mind move is wanting. Wanting something. That's what causes your mind to be restless, to move, and not to go to its natural state of stillness. Calling it a natural state means your job is to get out of the way and just allow your mind to be naturally still, rather than forcing it, rather than holding it, rather than making it still. You don't make it still, you let it be still by getting out of the way, letting go of craving. Which is why Ajahn Chah would support that teaching by telling us again and again and again, you monks, because he was teaching monks all the time, you're meditating here not to attain something. You're meditating to let go of everything. So For those of you who have come here to wanting to attain peace, wanting to attain the jhanas, the deep states of meditation, which are very blissful, wanting to attain the stages of enlightenment like Sowan and Anagami or whatever, then you are totally wasting your time. You're not here to attain something. You're here to let go of things. If you're here to try to attain something, you've got all these goals, what you want to achieve, that wanting will stop you experiencing the deep peace, the stillness, and the insights which make up the jhanas, which make up the enlightenment. Your job is to see how much you can let go, how much you can be still, how much you can be peaceful. You'll find all this wanting business just stops you being peaceful. It's a very hard thing to do, but after a while you get the message, the penny drops, as they say. Once the penny drops, meditation becomes so delightful, so easy, so blissful, and so profound. When you stop doing things, you stop wanting, you'll find the mind naturally becomes more and more still. And all these deep meditation states, they just happen. You don't go looking for them, you don't go grabbing them, you don't go searching for them. And many of you will experience this. You'll be sitting here, and yeah, you've only meditated for half an hour before, and you sit here and you just do absolutely nothing. You let go, you just make peace. You don't have anything you want, nothing you're striving for, trying to get. And you sit here for hours, perfectly still, perfectly happy, having the time of your life. One of the reasons, even though I have huge amounts of responsibilities, I enjoy teaching retreats, not just personally, because I get to meditate more than usual, but also out of gratitude. Because the first meditation retreat I did as a lay person changed my whole life. I was a student, still at Cambridge, had a meditation retreat, I had a girlfriend, I had sex with her maybe about a few days before in Gloucester. I went on this retreat and after 3 or 4 days got into such a beautiful state of meditation, it was much better than sex with your girlfriend. And that really changed my life. What the heck is going on? No one told me that meditation could be so blissful. It was quite the opposite of going to the dentist. It was something, wow, how can you get so much peace and bliss just by letting go? I had a good teacher, which was wonderful. And I had the courage to let go. It is a courageous thing not to do things and just to be instead of trying to go somewhere. But it works. And from that time on, I got very interested in this Buddhism, especially meditation, on how powerful it is, and also how profound. I was always thought that if you want to get anything useful in life, you have to work hard for it. And of course, you spend your whole life working hard at work, in your career, at your studies, in your relationships, at home, working so hard. And the very idea, if you stop working, really stop, and actually be still, you can get something wonderful. It's almost counterintuitive, which is why a lot of people don't do it. But you know that this is the teaching, this is how the Buddha taught. Before he became enlightened, he did this little test. He was saying that if this worked, it meant he would become enlightened. It's a really weird story, if you don't understand it. He put his bowl in the river next to Bodh Gaya, where he lived, the river Niranjara. And he made a resolution, if I am to become enlightened, may my alms bowl float against the current, go upstream instead of downstream. And it did. And that was usually taken just to be an omen, a prediction, which is very un-Buddhist. We don't do predictions and omens and all that sorcery business. But what it really means, it's very clear once you have some understanding of meditation. It means you are going against the stream of wanting, of craving. You are stopping. And you are doing something which is very uncommon. Not to want anything, not to strive, to go against the stream of all wanting. That is the path to deep meditation and to all enlightenment. It's called letting go, but letting go is a hard thing to do. But because letting go means not controlling, that is also one of the reasons why we have no schedule here. This is not just pandering to your fact that you're namby-pamby cream-puffs and you can't be the tough meditators. That's not the point. By teaching non-control, in other words, when you feel like meditating, meditate. When you feel like sleeping, sleep. By having that non-control outside, I'm encouraging you to have that non-control inside. Many times during meditation retreats, when people get a bit restless or they don't know what they're doing, I sometimes suggest to them, ask your mind what it wants to do. Mind, what do you feel like doing right now? Do you want to rest? Do you want to go for a walk? Do you want to have a cup of tea? A lot of times your mind will say, yeah, I just want to meditate. I want to sit down. You work with your mind rather than against it. You don't control it. For example, those of you who meditated before, the most common problem with meditation is restlessness. I can't stop thinking. I sit down here, I've rested enough, I've slept enough, I sit down here and I keep thinking about this and thinking about that. I just can't be still. In all of the times, the basic idea in Buddhism is not trying to control things, but to investigate why. What is the cause that you can't stop thinking? And one of the reasons is the fact that you can't be still in this moment is because you're afraid of being still and you don't like yourself. That's why we have the teddy bear here. During this retreat, if ever you are restless, having a difficult time, I want you to do teddy bear meditation. I introduced this in a retreat I gave in Korea. It's a Korean monk here, Venerable Kema Chara, and he knows that many people in Korea are just so tight and so controlling. You know that interview I did at KBS, that's the main broadcaster, it was actually quite amusing for a Westerner because, you know, there was an anchor was interviewing me, you know, on primetime TV. And usually, you know, you speak to the guy, it's just like an ordinary guy, you know, how are you going, what's going on, and welcome to Korea, how do you like Korea? But the Korean tradition is, when they actually go on air, he became all fierce. Tonight, we welcome Ajahn Brahm, who has come to Korea because of... And it really quite shook me just how fierce they were. But that's just the culture, that's just, you know, the tightness which you do. You can see that in Japan as well. You know, they make an announcement. They don't make an announcement. Today we wish to announce that, you know, the economy is doing well. They always shout it. Today we announce that the economy is doing well. And so I had to introduce teddy bear meditation, where you meditate, you know, with your posture, with your teddy bear in your lap. And you'll be surprised just how it changes your meditation. Just the whole concept of having a teddy bear in your lap just softens you enormously. You know, you've got this beautiful, cuddly little teddy bear. And you just can't be fierce, you can't be controlling it anymore. It's instant adding the loving kindness into your meditation. So the meditation, the teddy bear is here not to take it to bed to cuddle. It's here to meditate with. Anyone can borrow it at any time. If your meditation is not working, just put it in your lap and meditate with a teddy bear. You'll be absolutely amazed at how positive this is. Very good. Because what it's doing, instead of saying this hard, I'm going to try and get something, you tend to actually just want to be here instead. Not be controlling, but being kind. Now, again, many of you may have heard the importance of mindfulness in meditation. Please forget that. mindfulness is one of the biggest obstacles to meditation. The reason is because it's just mindful and you try and be mindful. Instead, we have mindfulness together with kindness. And the new word which I coined, kindfulness. Not mindfulness, but kindfulness. Because that is a beautiful word which actually uses mindfulness but adds the kindness, puts them together, and you'll find that now you can meditate. This is mindfulness, I'm aware in this moment. This is kindfulness. Yes. Because without that softness, you'll always be controlling things. So please, this retreat is a kindfulness retreat. In other words, you are kind to your body, you are kind to your mind. And if you're kind to your mind, you will find, ha ha ha, it's not restless anymore. Because we've been cruel to our minds. That's why it can't stand us. I give this simile on retreats, the simile of being invited out for a cup of coffee. Suppose one afternoon you receive a call and it's somebody you know invites you out for a cup of coffee. You said, yeah, okay, I can come out for a cup of coffee, and then they continue on. We are not going to go to Starbucks or Gloria Jean's. We're going to go to Dome because I like Dome coffee. And we're not going to have your latte. That's just too much milk and sugar. We're going to have a flat white, whatever that is. And because I like flat white. And we're not going to have your muffins. I know you like muffins. We're going to have a biscuit because that's what I like. We're going to sit in the back, not on the veranda. I know you like a veranda, but I'm going to sit where I like to sit. And you're going to sit with me. We're going to not talk about your Buddhism. I'm fed up with Buddhism. We're going to talk about politics. And we're going to be there for 2 hours because that's the time I have. I don't care if you can't take that time. You're coming out with coffee to me. We're going to talk there for 2 hours. Now, if they put all those conditions on you, telling you what you're going to drink, how long you're going to stay there, what you're going to talk about, would you go out for coffee with them? You find an excuse. Oh, sorry, I just remembered. I've got an appointment, you know, with my doctor, my dentist, anything to get out of it. You will try and run away. Alternative, someone calls you up, invites you for a cup of coffee. You say, yeah. I say, where do you want to go for your cup of coffee? They say, I found this really nice coffee shop. Actually, in Singapore, someone once told me this beautiful coffee shop, the best coffee I've ever had, but I didn't remember where it was. Never mind, suffering is part of my life. But they know it's a wonderful coffee shop. This is a really good coffee shop. Do you want to try it? And if they talk like that, you want to try it, and they take you there. So what do you want to drink? And you say, you know, I like latte. You say, okay, I'll have one too. And they say, what do you want to talk about? Where do you want to sit? What do you want to eat? Would you like spending time with someone like that, who's kind to you? Of course you would. Now, what that simile means, sometimes people are meditating. Right mind, we're now going to sit for 2 hours, and you're not going to think about what you want to think. We're going to think about what I want to think, which is watching the breath or doing meditation. And I know you just like sort of doing whatever you want to do, but you're not. For once, you're going to do what I'm going to do. You're going to sit here, not in a chair. You're going to sit in a floor, because that's where I think you should be sitting, and you're going to behave. Now, people have been so controlling and so cruel to their mind already, which means as soon as your mind sees you coming, it runs off into restlessness. In the past, the future, into dullness, into sleep, anywhere to get away from you. That is a cause of restlessness. Your mind is afraid of you because you've treated it badly. So please change the relationship you have with your own mental world. Instead of trying to control it, be kind to it. This is what I mean by kindfulness. So you're aware of your mind. Be kind. Mind, what do you want? What do you want to do now? What type of meditation would you like to do? And for how long? If you're kind to your mind, you'll find it relaxes. It gets peaceful. You enjoy hanging out with your mind. If you go out with a really kind person, sometimes, you know, you think, yeah, okay, we'll have a cup of coffee, a couple of hours. Sometimes it's 3 hours and 4 hours. You're enjoying yourself so much, you don't notice time pass. This is how we sit long and deep in meditation. The mind and us have a good relationship. So please be kind to your own mind, and also be kind to your body. If you can't be kind to your body, you won't be kind to your mind. So kindfulness begins with your body, first of all with your posture. Now many people, when they start a meditation retreat, think that real meditators sit on the floor. And even those people with stools and cushions, they're not real meditators. Real meditators sit on the hard floor because they're tough. They can endure pain. They can fight through pain. They don't give up. Only those people who've got strong wills will get to Nibbana. That is total, what we call in Pali, gomayang. Do you know the word gomayang? Go is the Pali word for ball. Mayang is what comes out of the ball's end. So you know what that means. Bullshit. So whenever I say the word gomayang, you know what it means. So that is a bunch of gomayang. It's nice knowing Pali, because you can say rude words and get away with it. So sit on your cushions. Be kind to your body. If you do get really, really painful and tight, sit on the chairs. For those who don't know, that I built this meditation center. I sort of designed it, you know, with some help, but I sort of made those final adjustments and made sure that every one of your rooms has an ensuite. That was me standing up. The committee wanted to say, "Ah, it's too expensive. Just let's have just communal toilets and showers." And I was the one who said no, because I want everyone to be comfortable in this place. And I want everybody to have a nice, comfortable place to sit and to walk meditation in the halls, to the side and the back. And also, I want chairs. So we did research. You know, we went to many shops, sat in the chairs to see what was good for meditation. And you can see these are the chairs which come up. We had to have them made specially just the right height so your feet can go on the floor for the average person. Some people it's a bit high, some people a bit low. We're doing the best we possibly can. We have those with the armchairs for people who have got sloth and torpor, lean to the left or lean to the right. We even have some seat belts for those people who... So you don't put up the chairs. So the whole idea is to make it comfortable for you. And please never think you can't get into deep meditation sitting on a chair. People do get the deepest of meditations on chairs. The whole point of this is being kind to your body so you can relax it, so it becomes peaceful and delightful. The sign you're getting peaceful and comfortable is a delight. So I ask you to recognize this, be aware of this during this meditation retreat. You're sitting here and you relax your body and your body feels so good. Everything is loose, free, happy. Just the same thing when you go to a spa and have a massage. You know, or you just lie in bed in the morning and you've got nothing to do and you're cozy, you don't have to go to the toilet, you just lie there, just really nice and cozy. You just don't want to get up. This is really nice. It's the delight of a body which is relaxed. And don't underestimate that. That's important in meditation. So, your awareness of your body. How is your body feeling? And the kindness which relaxes the body. So if at the beginning of meditation you sit down, close your eyes, which gives your brain more space to feel the body. If you're looking, half of your brain is dealing with visual objects, visual data. It's got nothing much left to actually to feel. Close your eyes and feel the body with your eyes closed. As you feel the body, you can actually feel some tight places. Don't just say it's a tight place and endure it. Do something about it. Be kind. moves the body. At any time during the meditation, even right in the middle of the meditation, if there's an ache or a pain, it's much better to move the body than to endure. Yeah, when you move the body, you do disturb the stillness for maybe 30 seconds or 1 minute at max. You do lose progress, but you soon make it up again because your body is relaxed and is not causing an interruption again. So it's just basic kindness. And the same with other tight places in the body. Sometimes when you develop your mindfulness and kindness, you can relax the whole body. It's a skill I've been teaching, been practicing. You know, for many years I have my mindfulness, I have my kindness, I know what I'm doing in meditation. You can sit down, close your eyes, feel the body, and you notice some areas are tight. It may be sick, it might be because you've been working too hard or exercising too much. You can feel tightness in different parts of the body. You're aware of it, that's the mindfulness. You add this kindness, relax, let go, expand the knot, stop holding things tightly. And the whole body, that part, relaxes. And the mindfulness gives you feedback. It actually feels more relaxed, it feels more comfortable, it's more easy. And if you practice that, you learn how to relax any part of the body at any time. And I love saying this for women. Men works as well, but especially for women. Sometimes you can feel the body, you can feel some knots of tension in your breasts. That is incipient breast cancer coming along. You can feel something wrong there. Tightness, tension, something's happening there. You give it kindness. You find everything just relaxing, gets so easy and so smooth, and energies come. This is no joke. If you develop your awareness together with kindness, you can relax your body so much that you don't get sick. And I love telling this story, just to say, you know, what actually you can do. The last time I had a big sickness, you know, it's amazing I don't get more sick, you know, what I do to my body. When I was in Indonesia recently, you know, 8 cities, 8 talks, 8 days, usually 2 flights a day, because to get anywhere in Indonesia, the islands, you know, you're in some place like Pekanbaru. To go to Palembang, which is on the same island, you have to go all the way to Jakarta and then from Jakarta back to Sumatra again. So, you know, 2 plane trips every day, was waiting in the airports in between, not getting proper meals. And the main problem was that when you went to some of these small cities, you know, it was, you know, 30 degrees, it was a very hot spell at that time of the year, and the air cons never worked. You know, you can set the air con to 16, the lowest temperature, and it stayed at 28 degrees all night. And for somebody who was made in England, you can't sleep at those temperatures. So, you know, you don't sleep at night. So for many days, not sleeping at night, working really hard, you know, going to these big talks with 5,000 people, 3,500 people, signing books for hours and hours, and taking photos, sign books, taking photos, sign books, taking photos. That's my life. So it's very tiring. The fact I didn't get sick was amazing. But one of the reasons is that I know how to relax my body. You can feel it when it gets tense and learn how just to totally relax it. The best one was 2 years ago when I had food poisoning. Now, it was in October. Kemachara wasn't there then. Food poisoning in monastery is what we call as monks an occupational hazard, because you bring us the food, we don't know exactly what we're eating. We don't cook it ourselves, so we don't know what ingredients go in there. And sooner or later, you know, you're going to have some food poisoning or diarrhea. Same with you, you know, sometimes that people bring the food in, they bring the dana in. You don't know really what you're eating, and sometimes it just may be something which doesn't agree with you. Most of you will be very healthy here. It's really nice food. People just put so much love and care into it. But every now and again, you know, because I do this every day, that you get something which doesn't agree with you and has food poisoning, which meant that you have these very agonizing stomach cramps. You know, sitting in my, actually laying down in my cave, rolling around, trying to find a comfortable position, always in agony. And I am a stupid monk. It takes me a while, but eventually I remember what I tell others. So what would I tell somebody else to do in such a situation? And as soon as I remember that, everything's okay. So what I said, I'd tell them to be mindful and be kind. So that's what I did. Now this was real food poisoning. Should have really gone to the hospital and got some antibiotics or something. So I was aware of this terrible agony inside your guts. I gave it kindness. Because I gave it kindness, it got a tiny bit less agonizing. Only a tiny bit less. Gave it some more kindness. A tiny bit less painful. The mindfulness was giving me feedback. I was going in the right direction. I was relaxing my own guts. And it amazed me, even though it shouldn't, because I've been doing this for such a long time. It only took me 20 minutes of like mindfulness and kindness together, and the whole thing had totally vanished. My guts, no aches, no pains, nothing, got up and was back to 100% normal again. And that's no exaggeration. That was the clock, 20 minutes, that's all it took, of mindfulness and kindness combined to overcome sort of real dinky-dye food poisoning. So that is the power of the combination of mindfulness and kindness called kindfulness, and how it can relax parts of the body to give this natural healing, which is amazing, to get rid of all sorts of bad stuff going on in your own body. That's when it's sick. As you are now, it's so easy to relax the body. So it's totally relaxed and totally at ease. Now that is called developing your meditation posture. I'm not saying you've got to sit in this way or that way. You sit on a chair, lean back if you like. Leaning back is okay on a chair. 3 or 4 years ago, someone sent me an article, a science article from a medical journal, saying if you sit up straight with no support, you get bad backs. Just like we do in meditation. So if you lean back 15 degrees from the vertical is the most comfortable position and most healthy for your body. You ask any sort of chiropractor, physiotherapist, they'll agree with that. And then I noticed those chairs which we have here and most other chairs, the backrest is usually 15 degrees from the vertical. It's just almost Darwinian evolution of the most comfortable chairs. And these are comfortable for you. So please, if you have back trouble, get in that chair. And you can relax the body. You are being kind to it rather than controlling it. Say, no, I'm going to learn how to sit on the floor. I'm going to control the body. I'm going to endure the pain. I'm not going to give in to it. That is called ego. Control, and you'll only get pain and suffering. Don't be stupid. The first teaching the Buddha gave after his enlightenment was middle way, don't harm the body. Don't torture it. That was the first extreme the Buddha said not to do. And it's amazing. That was the first teaching. People think they know Buddhism and they go and torture their body all the time, thinking that's meditation, and they get nowhere. Be kind to your body. Awareness and kindness. Until the body can relax so much that you can deal now with your mental world. When the body is so demanding, it will take precedence. Which means you never really get too aware of what's going on in your own mind. Bodily feelings take precedence. When your body is relaxed and peaceful, you practice mindfulness and kindfulness. The body feels so at ease, so happy, so delightful, you can let it go. It's not demanding your attention or demanding anything from you anymore. It vanishes and disappears. As you practice this type of meditation, many of you will start experiencing sleepiness. If you do, well done. Congratulations. At least you can let go enough of your control freak mind, restless, always thinking, to go to sleep. That is a wonderful benefit, because so many people suffer insomnia, or they just don't sleep deeply or don't sleep well. That itself causes so many physical and emotional sicknesses. You can't rest well at night. Why is that? Because you can't relax your own body. The body is tense. So if you can relax the body through this meditation, mindfulness and kindfulness, you're already ahead on health and happiness. And the reason is that you can sleep well because you can let the body go. So if you get sleep in this meditation, well done. You know, you're not at the goal, but you know, you're getting somewhere. But the hard ones to teach meditation are those ones who just cannot stop thinking. Thinking. But you know, you practice this way and you're still in the thought stock. Mindfulness and kindness, first of all. And then, when you've dealt with your physical body, it's relaxed and peaceful. Yeah, you'll be sleepy first of all, basically because your brains are exhausted. You've used them so much, you've worried so much, you've planned so much, you've struggled so much in your work, in your life, in even getting here. So much planning, so much struggle, so much thinking. So your brain is exhausted. It will be sleepy, that's its nature. Don't fight it. Make peace with it. And if you don't fight it, you're not wasting mental energy. You're letting it be. Not wanting, not craving. And then you'll find, because you're not wasting energy through fighting, the brain soon gets its energy back. You're awake, you're alert, you're mindful. Not because you've fought your way to mindfulness, because you've used a natural process of allowing even the brain to rest. And then once it's rested, it has its energy back, just like your body rests. If it rests well, you're energized when you get up in the morning. And then your mind is fit for work. So never fight sleepiness. The story I like to say for those who don't believe me, who think that Ajahn Brahm just makes these things up himself, is one of the stories of the Buddha who was visiting a monastery in the forest, and he saw one monk, the first monk he saw, sitting perfectly straight, straight back, you know, the head tucked in, perfect meditation posture. And he turned around to his attendant, Ananda, said, "I'm worried about that monk." Sure enough, a couple of weeks later, that monk just wrote. The same day he went deeper into the forest and he saw another monk who was sitting, nodding all over the place, half asleep. And the Buddha turned to his attendant, Ananda, and smiled. I'm not concerned about that monk at all. And he has sleepiness. He said, "Oh, that monk's okay. The other monk I'm worried about." And after 2 weeks, that monk was enlightened with all the psychic powers. So if any of you start nodding, falling asleep, it's only another 2 weeks, and then full enlightenment with psychic powers. Now, of course, when you read stories like that, it's counterintuitive until you understand what's really going on. What was really going on, that first monk was a control freak. Yeah, you can hold your body straight. The same way the guards at Buckingham Palace can stand perfectly straight with all these people prodding them and trying to get them to move. They can stand perfectly straight, but do they get enlightened? I've never heard any of those royal guards getting nimittas and jhanas and psychic powers and enlightened. They do that out of control, force of mind. That is not the way to develop meditation, bliss or enlightenment. The other monk who was nodding, he was letting go. It was only a matter of time before the energies came back naturally and he wouldn't be able to be peaceful, be aware. He was being kind to his brain, which was tired. So mindfulness and kindness to your mental world comes next. And as you're mindful and kind of your mental world, you relax that in the same way you relax the body. Because you are kind and aware, all these thoughts don't come up. The mind doesn't want to run away from you anymore. It actually likes you. And you hang out together, you chill out, as they say. If you're going to stay with something, you have to develop kindness. Kindness is the glue which keeps your attention on the object. Without that kindness, it's a fight which you will never win. So you're kind to your mind. And after a while, because you're mindful, because you're calm, because you're not fighting and doing things, just like that leaf, there's no wind. It moves less and less and less. And all these stages of meditation we talk about are just the stages of the leaf moving less and less and coming to stillness. As you come to stillness, first of all your past and future disappears. Time stops, time vanishes. Why do you think of the future or worry about the future? Why do you think of the past? This is a meditation retreat. You've got absolutely nothing to worry about. The breakfast is going to be there for you tomorrow morning. There'll be a lunch there, you don't have to worry. I've got to plan a menu. What am I going to cook today? You know, what am I going to buy from the shops? Have I got enough of this, enough of that? You don't have to worry about that at all. You don't have to worry about your accommodation. It's there for you. We try and make this place as comfortable as possible so you don't do a damn thing except enjoy it. You've absolutely got nothing to do here. You maybe chop some vegetables, but how much can you think and plan about that? Which way shall I chop the carrots today? Long ones or the other? Maybe diagonal. You've got nothing to think about. But will that stop you thinking? You'll make up all sorts of useless stuff to think, but at least you know it is useless. You don't have to on this retreat. Even sort of using your mobile phones, we're in a very wonderful place here. This is a very low area for connectivity. So you try using mobile phones and you find you'll get no signal. Deliberately done. So you just cannot access anything. So you're stuffed. I don't know, we may have some relation who is in hospital dying of cancer. Oh, come on. You know, they'll probably be okay. And if they die, you couldn't have stopped it anyway, so who knows. Don't worry about the stock market, the football, or whatever else you're worried about in life. You're absolutely stuffed here, you just will not know, so don't worry about it. Brilliant meditation center, and the place it's sited is absolutely wonderful. You can't do anything, you're actually stuffed here. So because of that, it means there's nothing much to think about. You have to let go, there's no choice. And after a while, just being kind, you find all those thoughts, they tend to peter out. You try and fight those thoughts and say, I'm not going to think. And then you just like that silly story, the four monks keeping the vow of silence. Old joke, but good one. Four monks vowing silence until one of the monks sneezed. And the first monk said, bless you. The second, ha ha, you've spoken, you've broken your vow of silence. And the third monk, yes, you have as well. And the fourth monk said, I'm glad I'm the only one here who can keep silent. As soon as you do something, you're disturbing things again. So this is the trouble. If you try and control, actually you're making more noise. If you learn how to let things go, the noise stops, the leaf gets less and less and less. And as the leaf, your mind starts to relax because you let go. You don't try and control, you don't try and make it happen. You're just making peace and being kind. That's called letting go. Being aware and kind, you'll find your mind quite naturally gets more and more calm. The thoughts stop, you center in this moment, you get very peaceful. You become aware of your breath, not because you choose to, because it's the only thing left moving. It's a natural process. Your breath becomes very peaceful, very beautiful, you can see more of it. It's natural, you don't do anything. You're sitting here and all these experiences just happen. When you're being aware and being kind, the mindfulness gives you that feedback. You know you're relaxing, getting more and more still. You can feel it, it's obvious. With that stillness, more awareness, more happiness, these two go together, as I'll say later on. Stillness is the cause of mindfulness. The mindfulness gets stronger and stronger. That allows you to become more still. Along the whole path, it's more and more happiness the deeper you go. And as you go very deep, it just happens, you're just this passenger on a journey, you don't do anything. You just sit there, being aware and being kind. That's all you ever do. And just like your body relaxes and all the tightness and tension vanishes, all the tightness and tension in your mind which causes the thinking, which causes all of this disturbance vanishes, you get incredibly still. The breath disappears. You get into these incredible nimitta states where you see these amazing lights in your mind, blissful, beautiful, powerful. You get in these jhanas which blow you totally away, the bliss better than sex. And it's stillness. You didn't do it. You just got out of the way and let your leaf, your mind, become still. Then you understand just why the Buddha taught things like non-self. Not controlling, not willing, not exercising the thing which creates your ego, the will. You let go. And all these things happen. You try, you just get bigger ego, bigger sense of self and achievement or frustration. It doesn't work. Letting go, abandoning, renouncing, being kind, being gentle. And at last you think, hey, at last I can meditate. I can sit here and have the time of my life, relax, bliss out. Even if I'm sick, I can just let it be and bliss out even in sickness. Amazing thing to be able to do. You can't always watch your breath. For those of you who do breath meditation, you can't always scan your body. You can always be aware and be kind. If you realize that that is the heart of meditation, that's what you do. You don't try to be mindful. You don't try to watch your breath. You don't decide, I'm going to watch the breath at the tip of my nose or my belly, I'm going to do metta meditation, I'm going to do kindness meditation, I'm going to do body scanning, I'm going to do the impurity of the body meditation. No, that is not what meditation is. Meditation is what happens when you stop doing things. When you're just aware and kind. That's all. The meditation instructions are so simple. Kindfulness. But for the next 8 days, I'm going to teach you in so many different ways the same thing. Just kindfulness. Keep that as your core. There was a note saying that I should tell a few people about walking meditation. Because there are times when you sat down, you're fed up with sitting down, the mind and body doesn't want to sit anymore because you've got sore legs, sore back, sore something or other, sore bum. Something's always sore. So the walking meditation is the thing you do between sitting meditations. And you see we have these three rooms, the left, the right and behind, where you have these beautiful red carpets. That's how much we've looked after you. You can walk down the red carpet in your walking meditation. And keep on those carpets. That's actually how we design it. So psychology, you have these big rooms, and if you didn't have those carpets there, sure enough someone would walk diagonally, which meant that no one else could use that room. So you've got a choice, walking on the carpet or the hard concrete, and the hard concrete is too cold and too unpleasant, deliberately done so. So in order to force you to walk on those carpets. They're very soft and very nice. And so those are where you meditate, walking meditation. You can walk meditation in the corridors or somewhere else. There's lots of places to walk meditation in this facility. But when you walk meditation in here, these are the best. Because number one, wherever you start, that's where you come back to. In other words, in walking meditation, the first thing to remember, you get nowhere. That's the whole point of meditation. Stop getting someplace and be here instead. So that's what the first thing walking meditation teaches you. You go to the end and you come back again. Hee hee, welcome to life. That's what happens. Like that old story of these two old men. One had their 80th birthday, the other one was a little bit older. And the one who had his birthday, 80th, said, oh, it's so terrible being old. I've got a pain here, an ache here, everything is falling apart, it's just so awful being old. And his friend, who was about a year older, said, no, it's wonderful being old. I feel like a newborn baby. And his friend said, what do you mean you feel like a newborn baby? You're 81. And he said, well, I feel like a newborn baby because I've got no hair, no teeth, and I just wet my pants. Which shows you that many old people have to wear nappies. You start off with nappies, you go back with nappies. You start off with no hair, you end up with no hair. You begin with no teeth, you end up with no teeth. So we just go back to where we started. So don't you realize, welcome to life? Some people are almost there. So this is our journey. So this is what walking meditation is teaching. Where you start, you go there and you come back again. So all this achievement and getting somewhere business. Do you ever get anywhere in life? I remember this story, one of the friends, I was busy in our city centre, and I was so busy that I was rushing around with bits of paper here, bits of paper there, and he said, "How are you, Ajahn Brahm?" And I said, "I'm getting there." Have you ever said that? "Yeah, I'm getting there." And then he really took me to task. He said, "Where are you getting to?" I thought, oh God, he's caught me out. And so nowadays, when people look at me and say, "How are you?" I say, "I'm being here." He said, "I'm getting somewhere." Can you understand that most of your life is getting somewhere? You know, you spent so much energy getting here, to this jhana grove. Some of you got lost on Kingsbury Drive somewhere. But you're here at last, okay? So now you're here, stop getting somewhere. You've arrived. So be here for the next 8 or 9 days. Stop getting somewhere. And be here. If you understand that, that's what walking meditation is. You're just being here. You're not trying to get somewhere. So in order to be here, number one, walking meditation, you should start walking. You go to the end, turn around and come back again. That's walking meditation. So you all know how to do walking meditation now. Please, what am I supposed to do? Nothing. But how am I supposed to do nothing? I stopped doing anything. Crazy people. Okay, so you give them all these stupid instructions. Number one, be in the present moment. No past, no future, so you're here, okay. Number two, shut up. Stop thinking. Now, what the hell are you going to think about? You're walking backwards and forwards. Now what are you going to plan? You know. And number three, don't try and beat the world record for the slowest walker. You always see that in his meditation retreats. There's people, they're walking there. And you try to, you know, to beat them, being the slowest walker. And there's competitions going on in that place. But they're natural. Don't think of anybody else. Just walk backwards and forwards. Just to be here. And keep it absolutely simple, okay? So those are places where you don't do anything. You're walking. So don't have all these instructions. You know, I've got to move my left foot this way and my right foot that way. People love instructions. And it just panders to their need to do something. And when you don't do anything, so I'm not achieving anything. Exactly. I'm not getting anywhere. Exactly. I'm just being here at last. So that is how you do walking meditation. I'm not going to teach you any more than that. Try it. Get bored out of your skulls until you stop and just are here for a change. And just be with whatever you're doing. And that gives you an understanding. And when you're eating, just be with the food. Enjoy it. Instead of, you know, I better not eat too fast, I better not eat too much, I better not eat this, I must eat that. And, oh God, you make it so complicated. Just shove it in your mouth and eat for goodness sake. Just be here and stop thinking so much. So I think you've got the first message of this retreat. I'll add some more later on. I'll give some instructions on walking meditation. People demand that. But that's basically what it is. I'm setting the mode, the feeling, what's going to, you know, the whole idea of this meditation retreat. And after a while, you get it. And you can actually enjoy yourself here. Just be. Just go out and just look at the full moon. It's gorgeous outside. Just be here and enjoy it. You don't have to worry if you're tired. You can go to bed any time. You can sleep as long as you want tomorrow morning. So you have no pressure on you. It's not like, oh God, I've got to get up tomorrow morning because I've got to get to work. You don't. As far as breakfast is concerned, I guarantee it never happens in one retreat that anyone misses the breakfast because they sleep in. There's a natural alarm clock. And they're called hunger. You will wake up for breakfast for sure. But don't put any pressure on you. No tension on you. No tightness. I've got to do this. I've got to get this. I've got to get up to this particular time. I've got to... No, please don't do that. But one last bit of housekeeping. Please be very compassionate to the people who share your cottage. So please don't bang doors. You know, there's a kettle in there, but don't decide you want a cup of coffee at 2 o'clock in the morning. Because, you know, the kettles make noise. If you really like having a cup of tea or coffee in the middle of the night, get some thermos and boil the water beforehand. Because sometimes that people just, you know, they're very sensitive to noise and they wake up in the middle of the night because somebody's banging doors and making coffee and ding, 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 ding with the spoon as they stir it up. You know, I don't have any bells, but you make all the bells. So please be very kind. So I want you to practice in your cottage, or if you come in here at any time, what we call burglar meditation. Burglar meditation is pretending you're a burglar as you go into your cottage. And a burglar never bangs the doors. The burglar never makes any noise whatsoever, because the burglar is trained. If they make any noise, they get caught. So manage to be a burglar when you go into your hut, maybe late or early, maybe someone resting or sleeping there. You open the door without a sound. And you close it without any noise. And you walk like a cat walks, not making any noise whatsoever. And you open your door very carefully. Because if you make a noise, someone is going to call the police and you're going to go to jail. And that way you can close the door and no one knows you're coming. No one knows you're left. Burglars can do that. For goodness sake, meditators, you're much higher than burglars, surely. You're good spiritual people. If burglars can go in and out without making a noise, why are you like elephants? So please, be very careful and pretend you're a burglar when you're going into your room and coming out again, so you don't make much noise at all. And then you'll have a cottage where everybody is friendly and happy. Because you know what it's like when you get woken up or disturbed because some idiot just bangs the door. Please don't do that. Out of kindness for other people. And you are one of those other people. So as you do, so you will receive. So that way, these are just basic housekeeping. And I will continue on with more talks. There's questions and answers every evening where there's a basket out there, because all the questions we always call basket case questions. They go in the basket and I try and answer them afterwards. And it's sometimes good fun. Don't always be serious. I love jokey questions, you know, because this is, you know, sometimes people make meditation or spirituality far too serious, which makes them tense and tight. A little bit of laughter relaxes everybody. So you've got funny questions in the evening. Great time to do that. But anyway, for this evening, has anybody got any questions or comments which are necessary to answer this evening before you go to bed? Is there anything which I missed out, Dania, which should be mentioned? Going, going, gone. So, okay. So now I invite everybody to do what I call the flat out meditation technique. To meditate flat out. So please go to your beds after preparing yourself, brushing your teeth or going to the toilet. And lay down in your bed and let go. And have a good rest. You all deserve it. And see you in the morning. Those of you, the early birds, feel like you want to get up. You feel this is what you want to do. And come up and meditate with me in the morning. Otherwise, 6:45, have a nice breakfast. And 8 o'clock, we get the first real talk. Okay, so have a good night. See you in the morning. Okay, now I can teach you. Because as a monk, sometimes it gets really depressing seeing all these people go, sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. There's enough energy to what they're doing. So after the talks, when we do the three sadhus, this is how you do it. You don't do it with me, because I'll show you first of all. Sadhu. 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 Put some energy into it. Okay, first practice all together. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Doesn't that make you feel happier with more energy? Otherwise you get depressed. Okay, so that's how we do the three sadhus. Much more fun, more energetic, more happy, and you get deeper meditation. Okay, so have a good night. I don't do any more.
Very good.
Okay, good night, everyone. Could you hear okay? Good, okay. See, it's not really the sound, it's just some of the nuns are too old. Those who want to stay and meditate, you're most welcome to. This hall is always open.